the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday, if you're a duck, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, SportsZone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevevick.com, and week doesn't get bigger than this. Collectively, Saratoga week, Del Mar week, Haskell week. It's a magical confluence. Fold in the start of the yearling sales season. Fasig tipped in July. Fasig tipped in Kentucky Horse of Racing Age today. You name it. It's a bit of a overwhelming set of conversation points, a little bit of everything. And then there's the weekend, of course, to digest, and a lot from the weekend. And actually, a sad note, really, to start everything. And in fact, Sid Fernando will join us in about 15, 20 minutes, because the passing of Galileo on Saturday, issue with his left front that had been, you know, just an ongoing problem to the point where he had to be euthanized. 23, and still in service. He was not pensioned. Private, you know, some private covers and Coolmore certainly, you know, utilizing him at the late stage of his career as a stallion, but. There's only a handful of names. I'll let Sid, and I'm sure, you know, because it is a heavy few days here of bloodstock discussion, I'll let, you know, any of the bloodstock writers that are going to cover the sale over the next couple of days, let them opine too. But Sid first, to talk about Galileo's international influence, and when I say a handful, Northern Dancer, Dane Hill, there's you can count them on one hand. You know, stallions that have had the kind of influence, I've seen headlines. I mean, shape shifting, right? That's kind of a perfect description of what Galileo did in the shed, and he certainly had every right, given his own pedigree, between, you know, being by Sadler's Wells and out of the incredible Urban Sea. But I'll let Sid say it. I'm just going to guess that among breeding cognoscenti, that he even outperformed expectation, I'm going to guess. I mean, as a racehorse, of course, too. I mean, his career as a racehorse, and you know, he was a champion. I mean, the numbers are the numbers, the sheer quantity of things when you do pedigree tally and stallion tally is just crazy. It's just 91 Group 1 or Grade 1 winners. It's pretty staggering. And, of course, right on display within hours of the news was Bolshoi Ballet winning the Belmont Derby. And the Coolmore, Aidan O'Brien, Ryan Moore juggernaut sweeping the two top grade ones on Saturday at Belmont. We'll get into those discussions. the action over over the weekend. It's a nice mix, actually, beyond beyond the overwhelming invasion at Belmont by the Coolmore team, by the Bally Doyles. And how about Ryan Moore, who was talking a little trash, actually? There's a hard edge to Moore that I don't think there's a parallel I can think of in American among the American riding colony around the country. He is a... I'm sure there's a softer side and a more relaxed side, but boy, you don't see it you don't see it around the racetrack anyway. So Santa Barbara's performance in particular was was kind of what was anticipated, right? I mean, it was one of those situations where if she runs anything close to her best, she was going to figure to be too much. And Moore was pocketed. I mean, she was, for those that singled, and I certainly did, most people, I think, on their main tickets were singled with Santa Barbara. And when she was produced, and I said almost too covered up, but boy, she came home with a... I mean, like she was shot out of a gun. Those last, what was it? Call it 75 yards, and corralled Conlima, who ran terrific. I mean, it's funny because among the North American interests, and the way the race was shaped up, I didn't think Conlima was the one. If there was going to be an American that, that ran big and was successful, I didn't expect, I didn't really expect Conlima. And I'm just looking back. I want to go, there we go. Plumelee was supposed to be the major consideration. You thought there was a real chance for Higher Truth to move forward, and she did, and ran well. Gets Black Type. For Chad and Michael Ryan and partners, Team Hanley and Jeff Drown. But Conlima ran a game race, and Flavian Pratt just, just seems to pick these horses up and carry them around with him. And Gam's Mission ran well. I know that Cherie DeVoe was happy, lost a lot of ground, lost, I think, 36 feet to the winner and 50-plus feet to the runner-up. So... Look ahead to Saratoga with a lot of them. Bolshoi Ballet, when it came to the boys' race, Moore just kind of was biding his time. And in terms of, I'm not going to read too much into the figures. I know the figures. First of all, turf figures aren't as aren't as relevant per se as dirt figures. But the girls ran markedly faster than the boys, and the horse that I did like among North Americans was the Rusty Arnold, that cellist, who ran very well. Hard Love fell away, but Cellist stayed on, and that Tokyo Gold came flying late to just get past Cellist, and that kind of doomed my approach in there personally. Cellist was 16-1 and ran very well, but the girls were the stars. In fact, not only were the girls the stars on the turf side Saturday at Belmont, but also on the turf. But the dirt star, we're going to talk to Mark Cassie after Sid. Mark will join us. 9:40, 9:45. A big weekend for Team Cassie at Woodbine, but most notably, and Mrs. Weber wins two races within, 20 minutes of each other. First at Woodbine, our flash drive, 2 3-year-old fillies, both sired by Hill and Dale Stallions. our flash drive won the Celine, but then the performance that was jaw-dropping, super sensational, who I've liked right along. I wasn't as crazy about her in this spot. I mean, used her as a C. I was totally impressed. I know Scully was all over her, but the race changed a little bit. I thought that Bella Sophia came out, and I thought that Overcharged, who came over Jose Cameo's filly that came over from Monmouth, and Louis Saez aboard. When Bella Sophia came out, I thought, well, now Overcharged, you know, there's going to be just a little bit less pace pressure, and she ran well. She finished a good second at 6-1, but super sensational. Just came absolutely marauding and sets herself up as a major player for the test. And happened to hear and talk with Mrs. Weber, who was absolutely thrilled. This is a, you know, this is a purchase, actually. This was not a homebred. The other one, Woodmine, was a homebred, our flash drive. But this was a pricey purchase who was good from the get-go and kind of breaks through in this spot in the victory ride. So Saturday, you know, there was the pick six carryover, which was a lot of fun. And then there was, you know, the cross country. We'll talk about Delaware in a second. And we'll talk to Jimmy Ryerson this morning. But the two, you know, the two big plays, I mean, that I focused on, the cross country, which paid very well, considering, you know, and granted, you had the, you know, the upset in the Del Cap with Miss Marissa, with Jimmy, and I'm looking forward to that conversation. But it was super sensational. I think, you know, between the two of them, that, well, I mean, nobody played that ticket without Bolshoi Ballet at Santa Barbara. You know, as we discussed with Nick, you know, the idea was that you could really go pretty tight and narrow, but just enough between Miss Marissa and Super Sensational, just enough to really boost the way the cross country came back, 1,500, and heard from a couple of people that had a lot of fun with it, 1,575. So, interesting sequence. And the pick six, it's funny, outrageous bet. And congratulations to Patty Lavelle. She, Windhorse is the nom de course, and I'm sure she was simultaneously thrilled but sad to lose Outrageous Bet, who was claimed away, wins the nightcap at 21-1 and really boosted all the multis in New York. That pick six paid $23,000, and there was $600,000, you know, added to the carryover figure. The dollar pick six situation, and with Saratoga getting started Thursday, really, the dollar pick six is going to be, there's going to be, you know, some real hoopla when it comes to the Saratoga carryovers, right? I think so. So, fun afternoon on Saturday, and to sort of morph from the Belmont side to the Delaware side before we talk about the first two cards at Saratoga, Miss Marissa's win, and you could tell on the backstretch, Daniel Centeno was moving along, you know, very effortlessly. You know, had, you know, Gibberish was, you know, was in proximity, but wasn't really putting on too much pressure. And Centeno able to really, you know, kind of just relax with Miss Marissa. And you could tell Bonnie South didn't look comfortable or look like, you know, she was going to be involved or seriously, really at any point. I mean, when she did, you could see that when Giroux asked, you know, she made the mildest advance, but just there was really nothing there. And both of the short-priced favorites for Brad Cox Saturday tripped up because Australasia, I mean, I picked her third and was against her. It just didn't. When a horse is that gingerly fed, you know, spoon fed, in terms of competition level, not to take away from, you know, what she's accomplished, but this was a very different scenario, and coming off of a fairly significant, you know, career best, the last time that happened with her, she had regressed. So, you know, anybody that believes in regression. Off of top efforts, that was a contributing factor. And then there was the competition. And she was not, I mean, on figures, if you're a speed player, on figures, Australasia wasn't significantly better. And honestly, the same is somewhat true for Bonnie South. Bonnie South had a glossier resume, but she wasn't any, you know, that much faster. In fact, Miss Marissa, I think, had a bigger fig in one of her wins earlier in the year. I think had the best number. So anyway, the key to the Miss Marissa story is Jimmy Ryerson, who is as well liked and respected as anybody anywhere. And I never hesitate or resist the opportunity to applaud those kinds of wins. And that tweet that I put out was really well received, including from a lot of other horsemen. And Jimmy's not on Twitter, but I tweeted, you know, when Jim Ryerson wins a race like the Del Cab, everybody wins. Oh, we all win. And I saw a bunch of horsemen like it. And that just kind of an indication of how highly Jimmy Ryerson is thought of. This was Camarota Racing. We'll let Jimmy talk about her, and you know, she was the clear second choice. And when you get away with the kind of splits that she got away with in that Del Cap, shouldn't be surprised. And you know, she wins well, wins clear. A nice win for Daniel Centeno. Should, you know, fold that into the equation, right? The rest of the Delaware action, speaking of connections that are easy to like and jockey-trainer combinations, Dalica, Al Stahl, we talked to Al last week, not going to call him back, but we had kind of hinted ahead, but Miguel Mena, who I just, is one of my favorites and has been for years, and we got him on, you know, going back to Ossible, to her win at Saratoga, and I sought out Miguel. He'd ridden for Chuck and us on a few occasions in Kentucky, and he just hustles, and I think the world of Miguel Mena. He wins the Robert Dick and the 5-year-old mare. Yeah, you got. Almost 9-2, paid 10.60 to start the cross country. The horse that took money and who, it's funny, I didn't, when we were handicapping it, a lot of us were focused on Temple City Terror, who ran okay and kind of had a mild rally to pick off third. But Luck Money, the Delacour for Mrs. Wills. And she on the line, I think she was like 8-1. And so I used her prominently. But she got bet. She ended up going off as favorite, which was kind of astounding. And I don't know, we'll talk to Mike Stidham, I'm sure, soon. Micheline is kind of struggling. So that was the Robert Dick. The rest of the sequence at the stakes action should slip in while we got a chance, and we'll reach for Sid here now. Case, let's get Sid lined up and talk about Galileo. But How about Chubwagon, who is just terrific. Chubwagon coming off the win at Pimlico, wins the Dashing Beauty. It was 1-9. No surprise, but which is a cool filly. And Fat Man. We talked about Fat Man last week, who had been entered at filly in an allowance, but Kent Sweezy waiting for this spot. And just a small stake, the Battery Park, but it's always nice to get a trophy, right? I hadn't noticed, but there was there were two other stakes leading up to the weekend, the Sussex. Mark Schumann, Try for Gold, won that Sussex, and Rising Bella for Steve Claseris won the Peach Blossom as well. Other than that, you had Delaware and Belmont were the big stakes action, and the four at Woodbine, and we'll talk about those with Mark Cassie when he joins us. And of course, Saratoga set for the first 2 days, Thursday and Friday. And as I wrote on Saturday, that early morning text that the racing office is taking entries for opening day at Saratoga, that got a big positive response from everybody, and the two cards getting us going. Schuylerville, the traditional opening day standard, and also the quick call, too. And come back with the Forbidden Apple on Friday. So two-year-old race, it's all there. Saratoga getting ready, and we got Del Mar yet. We're going to talk tomorrow, I think, to David Jerkins as Del Mar gets ready to start filling out cards, and a lot of focus certainly for Haskell. And Haskell's coming up very nice. Hot Rod Charlie, Mandaloon, Midnight Bourbon, Weyburn, Following C. So as I said, it's a big week, and sad to start it off talking about a passing, but Sid Fernando joins us. I wasn't going to wait till Wednesday, Sid, with this Saturday morning news of Galileo having to be put down, having a hoof issue that has dogged him and his left front. The outpouring, very predictable, certainly. Good morning, Sid.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's funny because I actually, my column in TDN now appears in the Wednesday paper instead of the Friday paper. So I just actually yesterday I wrote a piece. It's not published yet, but it's on Galileo. So it's gonna be in the Wednesday TDN. It'll come out Tuesday night. But yeah, I was just compelled to write it because. This is a horse that, in the history of the game, has to be up there as one of the all-time great sires. Certainly the greatest stallion of recent years, modern times. And his competition really primarily would come from horses like his own sire and grandsire, Sadler's Wells and Northern Dancer. All three, Northern Dancer, Sadler's Wells, and Galileo, for me, have been personal favorites as well. So, yeah, it's a topic I know really well. It's a topic I've followed. In my youth, I was able to see Northern Dancer live at Winfield. I never got a chance to see Sadler's Wells, Steve. So a few years ago, in November of 2018, Cynthia and I took a trip to Coolmore, took a trip to Ireland, but specifically it was to see Sadler, it was to see Galileo, and it was actually to talk to the main architect of his success. And the beneficiary of the success, Aidan O'Brien. I was able to do both of that, and I ranked that up there in my career as one of the highlights.
It, I made the suggestion in the opening, and I said that I'd let you make a determination. Given his own pedigree, Sadler's Wells, mm-hmm. out of Urban Sea, did he meet or exceed his expectations as a stallion?
Oh, my God. First off, to meet those expectations would be monumental, but to exceed them to the degree he has
yeah.
is even more monumental. I mean, he has exceeded expectations by so many powers of whatever, you know, whatever number you want to throw in there, above 10, you know. Just a phenomenal stallion, and, you know, there's some interesting things about him. One is, I'm sure your listeners are aware of the specific physical characteristics of the Northern Dancer line. You know, one of the things that Northern Dancer did when he arrived as a stallion is he kind of changed the accepted norms of physicality at the time. He was a very small but very powerfully made horse. You know, he was bred by E.P. Taylor Winfield in Canada, and Taylor offered him for sale, as he did all his stock, as a yearling, and he went unsold for $25,000 because of his size. And, of course, Taylor then kept him and won the Kentucky Derby with him, and Lynn was able to put him to stud. But he was a small horse, probably 50, you know, a little over 15 hands, 15-1 as a racehorse, fully matured as a stallion at 15-2, but a little big horse. I mean, just, you know, bursting at the seams, muscular. Anyway, when he went to stud, of course, his international reputation came early because he sired the last, which is now the last English Triple Crown winner, Nijinsky. Nijinsky was purchased by Charles Engelhard, Cragwood Stables, trained by Vincent O'Brien at Ballydoyle. And for Vincent O'Brien, who'd been coming and been very interested in American horses prior to that, that was really the introduction to Northern Dancer and how great Northern Dancer was as a stallion. And so that began this transatlantic voyage of Northern Dancers to Europe. And the one point is Nijinsky was an atypical physical for Northern Dancer. He was a bigger, scopier, longer horse. Most of the other Northern Dancers fit the mold of his. He stamped them. Danzig, Liefard, Nureyev, Sadler's Wells. And so I'd never seen Sadler's Wells in the flesh, but so when I went to see Galileo, he'd been listed at 16 hands, and I figured, huh, that's interesting. Probably you know, a little bigger than the typical Northern Dancer. Well, when I got there, I was absolutely stunned, Steve, because you know, I don't want to say Coolmore was fudging numbers or whatever, but I've stood in front of plenty of horses, and it could be that Galileo, you know, as people age, they shrink too, and it's certainly possible for horses. But when I saw this horse, it was like, this horse is 15-2, you know? And he looks, and he had the Northern Dancer shape to him. So it was a real thrill to see him. He had such a great intelligent eye, such a great bomb-proof presence to him. You know, that Northern Dancer swagger, and I was just a pure delight to see him. And, you know, of course, I went 2 years ago because he'd had college surgery, and, you know, he was a horse that I just did not want to have a chance to miss. And I can say, yeah, I went to Ireland to see a stallion, and purely as somebody who was interested in horses, purely as a fan, and it was a great thrill to see it. And, of course, it was a great to see Coolmore. And ultimately, I had a great chance to talk to Aidan O'Brien because the horse is intertwined with Aidan's success. Vincent O'Brien trained at Ballydoyle, retired in 94. At that point, the transformation was taking place from the Sangster Gangster group to John Magnier, the Coolmore boss, who installed Aidan O'Brien in 96 at Ballydoyle. Now, Ballydoyle is the training facility for the Coolmore group, right? Very close by. So, 96, the young Aidan O'Brien comes in. 2 years later, 98, Galileo is born. And in 2001, Galileo wins the Epsom Derby and brings for John Magnier, I should say, in the colors of his wife, Susan Magnier, in partnership with Michael Tabor. And so begins a new run of success for this story group, which had gone through a little bit of a dry spell in terms of Epsom Derbies, because Vincent O'Brien had trained six, and then, it had kind of petered out a little. He's retired. Aidan takes over. 2001, Aidan wins with Galileo, becomes Sadler's Wells' first Epsom Derby winner. Now, Sadler's Wells is that Coolmore. He's aging at this point because he's 20 when Galileo wins the Epsom Derby. By the way, as an aside, the very next year, Sadler's Wells got his second Epsom Derby winner at the age of 21 when his son, High Chaparral, won the Derby. So he ended up, Sadler's Wells did end up with two Epsom Derby winners. Northern Dancer had three. Nijinsky, The Minstrel, and Secreto. All three of those, by the way, were trained at Ballydoyle. Nijinsky by Vincent O'Brien for Charles Engelhard. The Minstrel, of course, for the Sangster group. And Secreto was trained at Ballydoyle, but not by Vincent O'Brien, but by his son, David O'Brien. Northern Dancer Colt trained by David O'Brien for Italian owner Luigi Migrietti. And that was a famous Epsom Derby of 84 where the son, David O'Brien, defeats his father, Vincent O'Brien, who has the heavy favorite and the iconic Colt El Gran Signor for the Sangster group. Two Northern Dancers battle it out with Secreto beating El Gran Signor by a head. So you had those three there, then you had a dry period. Galileo comes on the scene. He wins the Epsom and Irish Derbies, gets Aidan O'Brien really rolling. And here's the most amazing statistic. Since Galileo arrived on the scene in 2001 and won the Epsom Derby, the Coolmore partners have won 9 Epsom Derbies in the ensuing 21 years. 9. 8 of them trained by Aidan O'Brien. And all of them, either by Sadler's Wells, 2, that's Galileo and High Chaparral, then by Galileo himself, but 5 Epsom Derby winners. That's a record. No stallion has sired more than that. 4 of those were for the Coolmore group. And then 2 Epsom Derby winners by Mongeau, another son of Sadler's Wells who stood at Coolmore, and have won by one of Mongeau's sons. So all of the 9 Coolmore partner Epsom Derby winners are Sadler's Wells line horses. Altogether, Galileo has 5 Epsom Derby winners. Mongeau has 4 in second place, co-tied with several other horses. Phenomenal record. And, of course, this year, Galileo himself didn't win the Epsom Derby. A son of his didn't win. But his great son, Frankel, got his first Epsom Derby winner this year. So this is a phenomenal line. It's a phenomenal testament to everybody that's been around this horse and how he's benefited Coolmore, Aidan O'Brien, the breed, And particularly with Aiden O'Brien, Steve, Aiden O'Brien is such a meticulous horseman. I saw it firsthand over there. He's a guy that is extremely intelligent. He studies the habits of horses. He wants to instill confidence in horses. He wants to instill confidence in the people around those horses. It's such a holistic training regimen that he has there. And he knows the Galileos inside out. And it's because of this knowledge of the Galileos and the fact that he gets to train so many of them. You know, most trainers don't get to train so many runners by one stallion. And most owners don't have that type of association with one stallion, particularly in this commercial age. You know, you go back to the Claiborne and the Phipps family and Bold Ruler, and of course the Phippses ran so many of the Bold Rulers, and you know, Mr. Phipps trained them, and you had that kind of knowledge back then. You could say to some extent with Overbrook and Stormcat and D-Wayne Lucas, you had a bit of that, but nothing of the scale of this. Aiden O'Brien, the Coolmore partners, and Galileo. And so because of this innate knowledge of Galileo, he has been able to exploit really the main trait that he feels Galileo passes on, which is what we call in the business try, T-R-Y. Aiden O'Brien has told me over and over again, the thing that separates the Galileos from any progeny of other sires that he's ever seen is this ability to give 150% all the time. And the example he uses is that sometimes when you lean on a horse and you work a horse hard or whatever, that horse feels some pain. He doesn't want to go there again, so he won't put out again the next time. He says with the Galileos, they'll go out, give you 150%, and then they have short memories. It's sort of like a pitcher who gets hammered one day, and you need a short memory to come back so it doesn't haunt you. He says the Galileos are that way. They come back, and they give it to you again. He says they'll kill themselves stone dead for you, in other words. They just keep giving, and that's a big trait. That Aiden O'Brien says it's not a physical thing with the Galileos. And if you look at Galileo and the Galileos in general, they're not, you know, show horses. They're not justified, for example. They're not big strapping horses that have the physicality. But Aiden O'Brien says it's a mental trait, and that's what he works with the most. And so that explanation to me really hit home, especially as he showed me the horses he was training. He showed me the characteristics. He showed me how he treats, you know, make sure they're breathing right. Very meticulous. And I don't mean to keep carrying on here with that. listening out of your breath. I wanted to get this information out. And of course, I tweeted a column to you right now. Francis Caron, our Bloodsack editor, worked there with consultants, wrote a fabulous piece on Galileo, has all the numbers. She went to visit him a year and a half after I did, and she's got some great photos, and she's got some, you know, recounts some of the great races. They're all gaudy figures, but tweet that out, and people can read that as well, and it'll tie into a lot of what I said.
I sent it out, and it's there now. Galileo the Great in the Who's Hot, Who's Not column that Francis does at workhorse.com, Work Thoroughbred right. Consultants. Sid, and we'll probably pick it up on Wednesday as we look at the sale results. Of course, the yearlings go to market tomorrow. The horse of racing age today starts at noon. But what one thing to just touch on too, on the back end here on the dam side, because Urban C is worth a discussion, of course, in her own right.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and I, my familiarity and knowledge, you know, of her really ties to Mrs. Weber with Mai Typhoon, who, you know, Mrs. Weber and Live Oak still waiting for Mai Typhoon to kind of produce something,
right,
you know, close to herself or in the, you know, Galileo See the Stars realm. But Galileo was the product of her third cover and first time meeting Sadler's Wells, and they went back four times in a row to Sadler's Wells, and then, you know, had to shift. Giant's Causeway produced Mai Typhoon. But Urban Sea is an interesting story, being by Mizwacky and, you know, having a fairly mundane North American roots.
Yeah, of course, you know, it's got the German dance. She's got Allegretta.
Allegretta.
Yeah. And it's so weird because in the, and I have to double check this, but sometime in the 80s, I believe I was at Suffolk Downs. And I saw Allegretta at Suffolk Downs.
Yeah, she finished her career at Suffolk.
There you go, I saw her at Suffolk Downs, and I was stunned. I still remember it because it was a German-bred mare. At any rate, so she ended up being bred to Mizwacky, got Urban Sea. Urban Sea, of course, won the ARC. Urban Sea was owned by David Tui, T-S-U-I. And what happened with this mating that produced Galileo was, of course, Sadler's Wells was the premier sire, so... John, if you notice, Galileo is bred by David Tui and Orpindale. Orpindale is John Magnier's business breeding entity at Coolmore. And so what they did was they entered into a, you know, as the Phippses used to do, and as Coolmore does with Judmon right now, Judmon would provide the mares, and Coolmore would provide Galileo or Sadler's Wells, just like the Phippses would provide Gold Ruler and other people would provide some mares. And they would, you know, as secretaries, for example, the Chenneries, they provided two mares and they flipped for the first one and they got the bride and Chennery got secretariat. Most similar fashion, they, you know, they bred the mare several times and each one took one. And so that's how Galileo ended up running for the Magnyards. So that's an interesting part of the story as well. And of course, Urban Sea is the only one of only maybe seven mares that have ever produced two Epsom Derby winners. There's the horse you just referenced, Sea the Stars, of course, won the Epsom Derby as well as Galileo, and of course, Sea the Stars also won the ARC. So she's a fabulous mare, fabulous line. And it's a great family that a lot of people have gotten into. You know, I know Mr. 50 has some mares from this line, and he likes to inbreed to Allegretta. Yes, that female line in itself warrants entirely its own discussion. And I don't mean to give it short shrift in this thing. However, because of the terrifically vigorous male sire line, and one that I'm so familiar with have studied for so long, I did want to point out, you know, that this is an incredible line. And, you know, there's this saying among pedigree historians that you don't usually get three generations of, well, three generations is the maximum generations of exceptional sires in a sequence that you'll find. So here it's Northern Dancer, Sadler's Wells, Galileo. And then usually the lines start to peter out, and maybe they'll come back again with a lesser representative down the line. But what's happening here is there's some history being made, because now you have Northern Dancer, Sadler's Wells, Galileo, and Frankel. And if you go back and you look through history, you don't usually find four outstanding stallions in a row, okay? Even with the Mongeau branch, for example, Savagewell, the Northern Dancer Savagewell of Mongeau, three phenomenal stallions. You know, Mongeau doesn't have a son of the caliber of Frankel. He's got Camelot. He's got some stallion sons that have done well. Nothing of the caliber of Frankel. So, the same thing if you look at Northern Dancer, Nijinsky, say, Cara Leone, and then it falls off, you know? It's very interesting that this line is so prepotent that it's going into four generations now in a row with Frankel.
Amazing.
That's another very interesting part of the succession of this line.
Well, and even in North America, and when subsequent conversations the next few days will certainly touch on undoubtedly some of the other sons, particularly sons, because you think about Red Rocks coming and Magician and Line of Duty all coming and winning Breeders' Cups, and Tylan Real. It's just unbelievable. We've got Treasure Beach. Treasure Beach standing in, I think, is the only Galileo standing in North America right now.
We've had several, the Travers winner last year or the year before for Shin Begay, he was by Noble Mission, brother to Frankel at Sit at Lane's End. Magician has stood here. You know, there have been a bunch that have actually stood here sometimes, including for the Coolmore's Ashford. The one real notable thing about Galileo in the United States is he mentioned an array of grade one winners and graded winners, but he's never had a graded winner on dirt. And that's something that Aidan O'Brien is so aware of, and he wants to win a Kentucky Derby with the son of Galileo. He'd love to. And so he's got three more crops coming to have that shot. So maybe he will try that. Maybe he'll try to rectify that record. Even Sadler's Wells has come into the United States in the form of a line that's pretty prevalent here on dirt, and that's the Medaglia d'Oro branch has made inroads on dirt here, and it's become a thriving dirt line, right? As a matter of fact, Rachel Alexandra was, I think, the first American dirt classic winner for the line. Maybe there's some hope that a branch of Galileo will come here and survive and create a dirt line here, maybe, as his own sire, Sadler's Wells, was able to do when his son, El Prado, Frank Stronach brought El Prado, Sadler's Wells, stallion to this country. And then El Prado got Medaglia d'Oro, who became a dirt racehorse as well as a very good sire of dirt horses as well.
Now, there's obviously more chapters yet to be written. Then there's, we haven't even touched, we'll save it on the broodmare side because, as a dam sire, there's untold yet to be written, and Galileo's passing on Saturday, really an international story. And Sid, this was perfect. I appreciate it, and we'll catch
absolutely.
Up on Wednesday too after day one of the sale.
Yeah, you got it. I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Sid Fernando, everybody, Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale, and Hill & Dale figures prominently, actually, in our first weekend result conversation, because Mark Cassie is standing by, and our flash drive at Woodbine, and then a half an hour later in New York, Curlin Daughter, super sensational, both for Mrs. Weber, then followed it up with the Marine win as well yesterday, Easy Time, who had an easy time of it. Mark, congratulations on the super weekend.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Long time no hear. That's never good.
Well, actually, there I had occasions I could have reached out. There were certain timing issues, and maybe I was waiting for this kind of a weekend.
That's what I mean. We haven't had one in a little while.
Well, and you're also obviously you're right here ahead of Saratoga, getting started, and the first couple of cards that are come out, and you between Woodbine and the late start, and
that's been tough on us. With we gear so much of everything we do is towards Woodbine, and with them starting late, it definitely gave us a slow start.
Well, making up for some of that here, third weekend at Woodbine. Let's actually, though, start in New York, because the super sensational performance, it felt like, kind of a all the T's being crossed and all the I's being dotted, a clear breakthrough for her, and you've been kind of waiting for it, understandably. Trider, going a little bit longer, but I'm thinking of other conversations we've had about her, Mark, and you always kind of in the back of your mind figured that the one turn configurations, elongated sprints was going to be her wheelhouse.
Well, first, let me start by saying, what a sire Curlin is. I mean, as a trainer, I train a fair amount of horses, so I get to get lots of different sires. But Curlins, they amaze me because they get better. They have great minds. I mean, she about falls asleep, when she's getting ready to run. And so what a sire Curlin is. Going back, she's out of an Indian Charlie mare, so that was always a concern, Steve, that maybe she couldn't, maybe have some distance limitations, and we tried it, and it didn't work. Her last race, actually, at Churchill in the Eight Bells, Johnny came back after the race very frustrated because he said he was falling a horse and got held up, and he thought he should have been right there. So her last race was a lot better than it looked. After that race, Mrs. Weber and I talked about it, and we said, what's our goal? Our goal was to win the test. And so then we sat back and we said, well, I want to give her probably one race before the test. And that's how we arrived at Belmont on Saturday. So we gave her a little break after the Eight Bells. Freshened her up just a little bit, and a lot of people seemed shocked by her performance. I don't know that I was shocked. I was extremely happy with it, but I wasn't shocked.
One thing that was notable, I thought, going in, and it wasn't, especially waiting for some of the decisions about scratches, between the cross-entered horses and the potential for some of the ones that were going to maybe be off, be main track only at Monmouth and the Blue Sparkler, etc. And then, notably, Bella Sophia coming out, it seemed to me like, well, you're not going to have as much pace in here, and despite that, you had an honest pace, but the way in which Flavian, came running with her, that's what I think people were really impressed with. I mean, it wasn't like that pace was completely collapsing.
No, she broke a tad slow, which she has done in the past. It's gotten her in a little trouble. It got her in trouble the first time we ran her along at the fairgrounds. Actually got her in trouble both times. Declan Carroll rode her both times, and her breaking a little slow got her a little trouble. Yeah, on Saturday she did break a tad slow, but, we just kind of, I don't give a lot of instructions. I didn't actually even talk to Flavian that day. I just told Shane Tripp, my assistant there, I said, tell him to warm her up good and let her settle, and she'll come with a run. And that's kind of what she did.
Very much. And, gets a fig that sets her up nicely, looking ahead.
Yeah,
her
buyer number's playing with the big girls now.
Yeah.
She got a 95, and I've got to believe that her rag and her thoroughgraph number is going to be extremely good, given, you know, the wide trip that she had.
Agreed. And with the obvious improvement, and I guess we should fold in Flavien Prat. And I'm going to look to my handy stat numbers. Cassie with Flavien, that's the sixth time you've ridden him. First win, actually,
Pratt. Sometimes good things take a while.
Not that long, really.
There's no question he's a great rider. What had happened was we were sitting, Johnny had ridden her, and we wanted to give Johnny first opportunity, but he had committed to Wesley a while back, and, you know, rightfully so. I know he rides a lot for Wesley, so there were no hard feelings there. And so I looked and said, well, who's coming in? I had actually tried to get three or four riders to ride her, and they said, well, we're committed. And, in fact, one of them was Karen McLaughlin. And I said, what about Louie? And he goes, I've got one in there. And I said, I have the winner. I said, we're going to be very, very tough. And he sent me back, Aaron did, you know, and said, you're right. But, you know, he'd already committed. So then I looked and saw who was coming in. And I mean, when I heard Flavien was available, that was nice. Yeah.
Well, and it's funny you say this, because I reached out early Saturday morning when I was writing up my own analysis and making decisions. And I, you know, I heard from Bill Anderson at Monmouth that they were going to be off the turf, which gave Camejo the opportunity to run Overcharged out of her own stall. But Kieran, you know, texted me back that she was coming. And so, you know, there's Saez. And I thought that of the Louisiana breds, it ended up being that Overcharged ran the A race, and Australasia seemingly was a little overmatched in there. But anyway,
I don't know if she was overmatched. She looked like she just didn't show up. I don't know. Yeah,
say the least.
I don't know about overmatch, but she just didn't show up. Yeah.
She was not any faster. She wasn't faster than you.
Yeah.
Or Overcharged. A lot of people,
it was interesting, because afterwards, you know, there was a lot said, like, a shocking upset, or I was like, well, I don't know what you guys are looking at.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't shocking to me.
No, and it shouldn't have been that shocking. Both Overcharged and Miss Brazil came in, and actually Bella Sofia, had she stayed, they all would have come in. You would have had three in there faster than Australasia on their best. So that was a terrific. I just know how excited
the
Live Oak team
said
is.
30 minutes. I don't even know if it was 30 minutes.
It was very, yeah.
It was pretty close. Before we leave Belmont, I just want to say I feel so bad for Palazzi. Poor Palazzi. I thought he had a big shot in the big race at Belmont. He drew the one hole and just had nowhere to go forever. And it didn't get a true indication. He's an extremely talented horse, and one of these days, things are going to break his way, and we'll be talking about him on a Monday.
Well, and I know just from our handicapping conversation on the weekend preview, Nick thought that Palazzi, you know, was the price, you know, to be interested in, actually, going into that
derby. And he just never, you know, Tyler came back just frustrated, and there was nothing Tyler could do. The one hole got us. He was pinned down there. There was not a lot of pace, and he actually, I think he almost clipped heels at one point in time. So, anyway,
in addition, since we were including that, and before we go to Woodbine, I thought Spanish Love Affair had a look coming into this, and she kind of dropped anchor.
She got bought. I mean, she wasn't, you know, obviously she was beaten. She wouldn't have been beaten near as far. He had to check her a little at the 16th pole, but if she'd been running faster, she would never been in that predicament. I think with Spanish Love Affair, I think we need to go back and maybe look at a mile and a 16th. I think she has possibly distance limitations, not so much by that she can't run that far. It's her demeanor. You know, she's a little tough to shut off, and we know the farther they run, the less pace up front. And you could see, you know, Tyler had to struggle with her for a good half a mile or three quarters of a mile, which you know, didn't help her case at all. I thought she got over the ground a little. I thought she got over the ground well. I thought, you know, all in all, I thought the turf looked pretty darn good. And then, so I think if I haven't lost faith in her. We're just going to cut her back and where she can get a little more pace to run at.
Well, and you know, you and Catch a Glimpse have, to me, when I think about these two races and when connections, you know, try to stretch out, and everybody thinks, well, it's too far. You look at a horse like Chelis, like Rusty's horse, and it fits that same mold that, okay, they're going to go slower, and so the horse doesn't have to expel as much energy. But if you're a high-strung animal, it's a little different scenario.
Yeah, that's the key. I kind of laugh at everybody when I've always loved when a horse comes running in the Derby and they say, he'll love the Belmont because it's a mile and a half.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way.
No.
Belmont's an entirely different type of race. There's, you know, so much less pace. It's what horse will shut off and kind of gallop along is what makes, you know, which makes that successful. And, I don't, like I said, she could go. I don't think the distance is necessarily her issue more than just her demeanor. And, you know, she just wants to go. And we were trying to cover her up and get behind the Todd Fletcher's horse. But she's actually very, very good right now. She's training extremely well. And that part of her got her.
Now and then you go for the more, you know, the high frenetic style, the, like you say, the mile and
I've said this a million times, you know, training racehorses is like putting a puzzle together, and when you win, when you lose you learn, and you have to look at each race and say, what can I take out of this and moving forward. There's disappointment, that's first. And then you're like, okay, I've been beat up many times. Let's figure out how we're going to right this ship. And so that's what we do, and we try to learn from that.
Let's shift gears to what went on over the weekend at Woodbine. And when I talked to Ron Gierkink on Friday, we kept kind of landing on a lot of your squares. And as mentioned, the win from our flash drive, this a homebred. This has got a homebred with Mrs. Weber and Live Oak's classic thumbprint on it, being out of the Dynaformer mare Dynamotor and by Go Zapper. And our flash drive takes a nice step forward. First opportunity against not just winners, but stakes company.
You know, Steve, she was a filly we thought a lot of. Usually when you see me, unless they're a New York bred, if you see me bring them to Saratoga, it usually means that I think they can run a little bit. So we took her Saratoga in her, and she was disappointing. A lot of her issue is in between her eyes or in her brain. She's extremely tough on herself. So we ran her a couple times, and I felt like she was just losing it. So I said to Mrs. Weber, let's just send her home. We're not going anywhere here. And as always, all you have to do is mention the word, you know, give them some time. She is a true horsewoman, and she believes in that. So we sent her home, and she obviously would have been ready to run a lot earlier had Woodbine. She was one of our Woodbine horses. We had her ready or raring to go. You know, she didn't get to run for a couple months. And when we ran her, I thought she was impressive. I thought she ran well, and as soon as she won, I said to Mrs. Weber, I said, we're going to run this filly back in the sling. She comes back okay, and she'll be very tough as long as she doesn't lose her mind. And, you know, Patrick Husbands, he's been, it's I don't know how long he's been riding for me now, maybe 25 years. And a lot of people don't realize it, but why Patrick started riding for me in the beginning was because I had a bunch of Mockingbird horses, and the only Mockingbird horses we wouldn't sell were the crazy ones. And poor Patrick used to get on, he'd get on all the crazy ones. So he's been doing this for a long time. He gets her calmed down. He gets her to relax. He gets his feet out of the irons. And he got her to the gate, and she was good order. And once that happened, I knew she was going to be extremely tough to beat.
Came back, you know, moderate fig, but stylistically, and certainly there was plenty of company in here that gives you some read, figure or no figure, including the Rorama horse, the Munnings filly that got back to Kevin Attard after Lynchy had her all winter, and her second in there, I thought, you know, kind of, and you had California Lily too, who, and,
right? You know, Woodbine's funny. A lot of people look at it and they say, well, you know how many times I've had horses run well at Belmont, or you know, just get beat at Saratoga, and I take them to Woodbine, and I'll say, well, this thing will gallop, and they beat them.
Sure.
So you just don't know how it translates. And then I've also seen horses like our Flash Drive get to winning, and you can take her anywhere and she'll win. Sometimes it's a little hard. Yesterday we ran a horse in the last race. He hadn't ran a long time, and I looked, and the favorite was a horse that was just claimed, got beat a length at Churchill Downs for $50,000. You got to think he's going up now and running for 62.5 at Woodbine. You got to think these horses are much tougher at Churchill. Yeah, he ran last. You know, so it's a little. It's not quite as simple as it makes it look.
Well, of course, you also won that race, right? That was you're talking about the race with My Silencer.
Yeah, My Silencer. Yeah, that was nice. Those people are wonderful people. They bred that horse. They put a lot of love and into their horses. I think they breed maybe 8 or 10 a year is all. And so that was nice. They're wonderful people. And yeah, My Silencer, he actually surprised me a little. I wasn't sure he was good enough to win that spot. We felt pretty confident. We had Wild Medagliora in the
right
race, but he kicked himself the night before and his hawk was blown up, so we had to scratch him. Yeah, we started out yesterday. I think we had to scratch three favorites yesterday. We had Ali Diva, who was the 6-5 at Ellis Park on the grass, and that race came out off the grass, so we had to scratch her. And then Gretzky the Great was going to be the big favorite in the stake, I think, there in the Queenston, and he's got a quarter crack that open back up on him, so we had to scratch him, and then Wild Medagliora. So it's typical. We had a great Saturday, and then first thing Sunday morning, it's lots of fires to put out.
Well, and that's when you got that. You got the kind of strings that you've got. You're gonna have that. I should ask too. Two things: our Flash Drive. You know, what do you do? Do you kind of stay put and go forward in the three-year-old schedule?
I think so. I haven't really thought about it. At some point, I would like to maybe give her a try on the grass, because if she can grass, then that opens up a bunch of possibilities for her. I have to be extremely careful. She thought wouldn't be a great shipper, so I have to watch that. You know, every horse is different. You have to know their personalities, and you have to work with them. She's a horse that really wants to run out of her stall. So it's I haven't really thought about that. I had a target for, we'll go the next day, Easy Time. That was a prep yesterday for the Hall of Fame at Saratoga. So he's a horse that I like a lot. I thought he would be tough yesterday, and he ran very well. And so I know where he's going. I haven't decided with her yet.
Well, should also touch on the on Saturday's action, you ran 2-3 behind Stuart Simon. Stuart Simon wins with Lorena in the Fury, and these are, you know, these are the Ontario conditioned. And I did talk about astrological with Gear Kink on Friday, and that dam, that Dixie Chicken, we remember from Catherine Day Phillips. And a Malibu Moon filly, $350,000, bred by the FitzHenrys, and an Eclipse and Gary Barber product. And you thought enough of that maiden win to try to write against Dan. Oh, that's right. She was a maiden. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. You were starting a maiden.
Yeah, there's a filly that really got hurt by the delay. She was so ready to run. She was ready to run the first week of Woodbine when they, you know, when they canceled. And she was... It's a shame because she could have possibly been an Oak filly had we gotten some breaks. That was our Flash Drive's workmate, and one's not any better than the other. So we ended up, we ran, you know, they kind of threw up. We were supposed to start, I think, on the 18th, Steve. You know, I mean, I've my wife, whenever I get emails for the condition book, it also goes to my wife's email address, and she goes, well, I won't be seeing you a while. Another Woodbine condition book. So we went through like four condition books, you know, with all these different changes. And anyways, they decided to run that card a week early, and there was a maiden race on the grass a mile. And I called up Aaron and I called up Gary, and I said, look, I don't know whether she can run a lick on the turf, but I mean, most Malibu Moons can. And I said, so we gave her a try, and she just didn't really like it. And then we came back, and we worked her again, and she worked really well. And I said, guys, well, I knew there wasn't going to be any problem with Gary. You only have to give Gary anything. Gary is tame now. So I said to Aaron, I said, you're going to think I'm crazy, but I want to run this filly back in the state. And he said, oh, whatever you want. You know, you do what you think best. And I asked Gary, and he goes, yes. I said, well, I never doubted you. I said, if I needed a, if it was for $1 million, I wouldn't have to phone a friend. I'd know your answer. So, yeah, Gary is he's a game son of a gun. And, so I actually thought she could win it. I was very happy with Curlin's Catch. I thought it was going to be a little short for her. She got held up a little, came running, and, you know, Raphael came back. He said, well, those two won't beat her again. Not, so we're going to go to the Oaks with her.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. All right. Well, that you know, the astrological, there's every reason to believe there's a lot to look forward to because, Guy Caballero and Dixie Moon.
Yeah, we'll be a little more patient with her. I'm going to probably aim her for the Bison City, which is the second leg of the Canadian Triple Crown for fillies.
Okay.
Try to get a maiden race in for her, you know, break her maiden. And then I'm not going to chase the Oaks with her.
Fair enough. The, we had a lot of fun. You know, that I can think back to, conversations with Catherine because when Dixie Chicken was winning stakes, the FitzHenrys also had Tennessee Lamb, who ended up not even close to as good as Dixie Chicken. And so here she is. Let's see, she's got to be what? She's 14 now, so she's got plenty. In fact, there's a couple of Curlins. Swing into action, Mark. There's a 2-year-old. Curlin Colt coming, and maybe they're selling. I don't know if they're selling or what they're doing. And
we'll be looking if they are.
Well, it's actually already got a name, so maybe they're keeping it. And they've
not good.
That they've named. This is great. They've named the Curlin Basketball Jones.
Well, okay.
So they're having fun with that. This was such a great. Should be doing more little feet lines.
Sound good for me.
No. There's an unnamed. Then there's a full brother. Actually, she didn't offer a full in 20, but she's come back. She's got another Curlin Colt by her side. So there's a pair of Curlins, nice. And of course Dixie Moon was a Curlin as well.
Right. Nice
family. All right, now we turn to our to our fun part of the conversation where put your pencils, everybody, to paper.
Wait, you haven't asked me about, to me, the most impressive horse we've had win this year.
Who am I forgetting?
And I'm going to kill his name because I can't. I just call him Philo. But I don't know if you saw a couple of weeks ago, we ran a horse. He was champion in Brazil. Belongs to Adam Wachtel and Gary Barber. And he came a 2.5-year layoff. And we ran in an open allowance race against stake horses. And he won impressively and ran, I think, 7/8 and 1/19 and 3. He was my, you know how we had talked about Ride a Comet coming off of over a 2-year layoff and 2 bows. Same thing with this horse. I didn't have him. I don't know who had him early on, but I think he was with Bruce Jackson after he bowed. Anyways, I got him, I don't know, maybe 9 months ago. And I was extremely proud of him. I thought his race was tremendous. And so much so that we're going to run him in the 4-star day next.
Ooh, he's
undefeated. So.
How about you? I'll give everybody the Theo de Ariana is the name. And yeah. Theo de Ariana. And that was a rich allowance. And I did see that I saw a note somewhere about, you know, that you'd had one that came off a long layoff. Amazing. And one clear with Emma Jane, who's tearing
it up.
Well,
and the horse that Hatfield ran second, he had just gotten beat a length by Brad Cox's good turf horse that came back and won the Wise Dan the last day at Churchill. I was actually amazed. I thought he would run well. I you just don't know how good they are. He had just demolished the fields in Brazil, but that would have been 2.5 years, and he trained really well. But seldom do I have watch a race with my mouth wide open, say in awe, but he did.
Well, there's a few, actually. You know, you also had that Pretty Clever win yesterday. There's
yeah,
some maiden
nice.
Winners.
She's game. Yeah, she's very game. Mm-hmm.
And I just want to look up, for those that are curious, I'm just going to look up, that was June.
We had a first-time starter 26th.
Win. Here we go.
A couple of weeks ago that we like a lot, too. Tom McGreevy picked her out, and Aaron Yagoda, my dear buddy Aaron Yagoda, called me and said, Tom saw this filly. She's Ontario Sire. I think we bought her for $8,000. And so then we talked about it, and we said, what can we give Mr. Green? So we gave Mr. Green, I think we gave him a third for his birthday.
Oh, nice.
And so then Aaron came up with, which is just a great name. Obviously, Mrs. Green is Lois, so he named her Lois Land.
Right.
She was very impressive. Here, Ontario Sire, I think she got about $70,000 for breaking her maiden. We bought her for $8,000.
Hmm. Before we talk some Saratoga projects, but I should mention Fio de Ariana, 95 buyer in that allowance win. Easy time. We didn't talk about the Marine yet.
Well, we did a little. I got ahead of you.
Yeah.
I told you that I was going to run him in the Hall of Fame. Yep.
Okay. There we go. Hold on.
But, yeah, he was impressive. I thought, Steve, when he ran second down at Gulfstream, Jose rode him, and he had really a bad trip. I thought he should have won by a couple lengths, but he showed me then that he really likes the grass. We had a few little minor issues with him. I brought him home to our training center in Ocala, which we often do. That's why a lot of people don't see me. We're usually, we get everybody ready in Ocala, and then when they're ready to run, we send them, you know, to different places. And I talked to the Breeze Easy guys, Mike and Sam, and said, let's get him up to Woodbine. He broke his maiden on the Tapeda. We'll try him there. And I said, I think this horse could be, you know, a really good three-year-old turf horse. So we're going to try that next.
Nice. How about, I did see, I mentioned this the other day when Ron was on, Dolder Grand finally broke the maiden. That was nice. But what about that 24 Mamba?
You know, there's a horse that I thought he was a nice horse. And the first couple times he ran, he just ran terrible. I will say this, you know, Raphael, instead of rushing him off of his feet, you know, when you run in those darn 4.5s and 5.8s,
mm-hmm.
you're kind of hustle. And finally, I just said to Raphael, look, I don't care. Just let him settle. Let him settle. And they were ding-donging it up front. He was 8 or 10 lengths back. But, I mean, he came flying. And what amazed me was he came from 8 or 10 lengths and won by 5. So he'll come back. There's a stake in a couple of weeks. But I think that horse is pretty good. Like I said, I was disappointed with his first two starts. But he's a classic empire, and so we got hopes.
Well, I was going to say that also is a nice, and he was 55,000. I mean, it wasn't like this was a huge investment, but out of a heart.
Really, when Classic Empire broke his maiden, he broke his maiden Derby week at Churchill, and he got left a little bit. Julian was on him, and Julian always. I tell all my riders, I'd rather be a closing fourth than a dying third. So most of the time they just sit chilly, let them get themselves together, and he did that with Classic Empire, and of course Classic Empire just flew home and won. So that makes a little sense. I think that Colt 2's 24 Mamba, he'll really like when they stretch out.
What from the other day too? A maiden winner. This had to have been Thursday. Carpe Horseshoe.
No, she got beat.
She got beat? Okay.
We're not talking about her, Steve.
Okay. that obviously. Okay. I'm looking.
I mean, unless you saw something I didn't see.
That was all right. So that was a little disappointing.
Will you call the horse's bookkeeper's office and tell him you thought she won? And
talk
them.
Talk
money?
Them in. What? Yeah. What about you had an Ellis winner too last week, Sweet Carolina?
Yeah. That's Violence's half-sister. One in the mud. I keep trying to run her on the grass, but she keeps getting knocked off. So I think she's okay on the dirt. I'm hoping the grass will move her up. She's got a big pedigree. Mr. Farmer's been very patient with her, and she's beautiful. So we'll see. She's got to get better. We won both that day. The races, they split that race, and then... We won the other half, too, with the Constitution filly, who's actually in the sale today at Fazek Tipton.
Well, how about some early preview to the season at Saratoga, too? Getting ready. You laid off, obviously, for this first two cards, but what do you got?
Yeah, I think we had a few to enter for the 17th. But we'll see. You know, I'm trying to think. We got Super Dormy, I think, runs on the 17th. Lulu Boyle. And one more. I can't remember. But I think we have three to end. Oh, Cotton, who just won. We'll see. I have a horse I'm excited about. He ran fourth first time out for Breeze Easy, Volcanic. He's a Violence colt. You'll see him get in action up there. And we'll see. We've already had a bunch of two-year-old winners. I have a colt that I really, really like a lot, Papa Cap. He broke his maiden.
You've talked about this.
Yeah, and but I'm sending him to, he actually just arrived today at Del Mar. So we're going to have a small string at Del Mar.
Oh, nice.
He's gonna aim for the best pal.
Nice. You were listening in at the end of Sid's visit to pay tribute to Galileo, and on that topic, I'm going to ask you about You're still looking for a maiden win for Frankel at Ascot. Thursday at Woodbine.
Yeah, she's been disappointing. We'll see. She hasn't lived up to her expectations. Maybe we'll get a breakthrough on Thursday.
Before I talk, ask you about some other maidens coming up at Gulfstream and Ellis too. You've got a pair potentially on Thursday as well, looking for allowances, Salty as can be and Pledge.
Mm-hmm. Both those sorts of training well. Salty as can be is Salty's half sister.
Right.
We ended up after her last race, we had to do a tieback surgery on her air, and she's trained well. I would expect her to run well. Pledge has trained tremendous. Not an easy race, but I would expect both to run well.
It's a group of seven going three quarters. How about the maidens coming up Gulfstream? You got some turf, and it's been impossible, really. Weather is very rough. Yeah.
I don't know how many times we've entered and scratched. So we got Pullman 8, which is my wife's horse. She's not bad. And then we got Zen for the greens. And I think both of them should run well.
And then finally, also at Ellis, and I haven't had a chance really to discuss much at Ellis, but for Conrad, Tempo Madness, an American Feral Colt.
I like that horse.
Two-year-old.
He's run a couple times already, had some trouble trips. I think that horse has a nice future.
This was a $210,000
American
purchase.
Feral.
Nice. Mark, and by the way, Chris Landeros is riding, and today's Chris's birthday. I saw that this morning.
Oh, well, good. Happy birthday.
So pass
Chris has done well
for everybody.
Yeah, Chris has done well for us.
Now, Mark, a breakthrough, big breakthrough weekend, particularly for Super Sensational, who was the expectations have been high, and she's the one who set them. It wasn't like somebody pinned hopes on her. She touted herself right from day one, and mm-hmm. now heads toward the test. Mark, I'll see you obviously.
Well, look
in
forward
the coming
to seeing
days.
Saratoga, and hopefully we can keep it going.
Without a doubt. Mark Cassie, everybody, and you can follow Mark on Twitter, Mark E. Cassie, and the whole Cassie team out there. You got the Cassie Racing DC for David Carroll, and David looking after those Kentucky runners. You can some comprehensive coverage of Team Cassie. Let's take a break, probably our only of the morning, and Rich Migliori going to join us next. We'll start to talk about Saratoga, Jimmy Ryerson later as well to talk about his Del Cap win, Eddie Keneally looking to talk to Eddie about his 1,000th career win. And if you were watching, it was kind of fun. That horse that got it for him, I sent Eddie a note. He said that horse ran like he knew he was going to be your 1,000th winner. He just stayed on, and kept his neck out there to give Eddie win 1,000. And of course, with Eddie getting his 1K victory, that leaves the next 1,000 winner on deck, and it's Super G Gary Siaka 4 away. Eddie and Gary have been on the parallel track for their 1,000th wins. Let's take a break, 90 minutes in, essentially, and 90 to come Monday at the races, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents